This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Paul Alexander in Washington.
And I'm Mario Ritter, coming up on Africa News Tonight.
There are lots of reports and lots of rumors of RSF shooting people in the various neighborhoods, of continued violence, even entering people's houses, but it's very, very difficult to confirm these allegations.
That's reporter Jason Patinkin discussing reports of security forces cracking down on protesters in Sudan's capital, Khartoum.
And we will examine a report by Freedom House on press freedom and democracy around the world. Also, an aid organization has identified the conflict in Cameroon as the world's top neglected refugee crisis.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Freedom House is an independent watchdog organization dedicated to the expansion of freedom and democracy around the world. Today, it released its annual report on press freedom. Earlier, Africa News Tonight's Yahya Swahib spoke with VOA's Salem Solomon about the report and why it's important.
Thanks for having me.
Salem, what is the gist of the report?
Well, the headline from the report is Freedom and the Media and a Downward Spiral. So Freedom House is concerned about the freedom of the press in some of the world's largest democracies. Here's an excerpt from the report. Large segments of the population are no longer receiving unbiased news and information. This is not because journalists are being thrown in jail, as might occur in authoritarian settings. Instead, the media have fallen prey to more nuanced efforts to throttle their independence. Common methods include government-backed ownership changes, regulatory and financial pressure, and public denunciations of honest journals. So what this means is journalism is in danger because of financial pressure from troubled business model, a lack of trust from public, and pressure from media owners with political agenda.
But what are the areas they are most concerned about?
So there's a lot of concern. Freedom House found that among the countries it had previously rated as quote-unquote free, meaning they have free, vibrant press, 19% or 16 countries have experienced a reduction in their press freedom scores over the past 5 years. And many of these countries are in a global west, in the global west. So press freedom scores in Europe dropped by 8% since 2014. The group also expressed concern that China is expanding in overseas influence operations through cable television and newspaper ownership. So they noted that in September 2018, with an example of partially owned by China, a newspaper in South Africa disconnected a weekly column after its author about internment in camps in, of Uyghur Muslims in Xinjiang in China. And so similarly, Chinese television distribution firms, the Star Times, operates in Kenya, in Nigeria, in Uganda, in Zambia, and distributes content that meets the approval of the Chinese government. So these were some of the concerns.
Too many negative reports. Is there any good news?
Well, there's some good news.
Okay.
Since 2014, Sub-Saharan Africa has seen some slight increase in press freedom scores, rising by 3%. Some of the examples that Freedom House pointed to: Ethiopia, which has opened up, and also the Gambia, having made particular gains following changes in leadership. So the Gambia was coming out of years and years of dictatorship under Yahya Jammeh. Freedom of expression in the press is beginning to return to the country. The new government is modernizing its media laws to allow greater freedom, and private media organizations and journalists are returning to the country, similar to what's happening in Ethiopia.
So looking forward, what is the big picture trend?
Overall, Freedom House expressed concern. So they are viewing a global trend of populism, ideal extremism in numerous countries, including Hungary, Austria, and others. And they found that many of these countries are seeing a rise in populist or nationalist parties, which are extremely mistrustful of the media and the rights of the press. And additionally, there's been a rising distrust of the public, of institutions, including the press. So people don't trust what they see and read. So this is making them more vulnerable to what they call quote-unquote fake news or ideologically slanted news. So it's also making the public more likely to accept restrictions on the traditional press.
VOA Salem Salamone, thank you for your input.
Thanks for having me.
That was Africa News Tonight's Yahya Suhaib speaking with VOA's Salem Solomon.
An international aid group has identified the conflict in Cameroon as the world's top neglected refugee crisis. Each year, the Norwegian Refugee Council lists crises in which at least 200,000 people are displaced. This year, of 36 such crises, 7 of the top 10 are in Africa, including the top 4, Cameroon, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, the Central African Republic, and Burundi. Cameroon's conflict involves the English and French-speaking regions. The council says violence has caused 500,000 people to be displaced in southwest and northwest Cameroon. Health workers are fearful of violence, and over 780,000 children have seen their schools closed. More than 1 million people are in need of aid. The group says although there are so many needs, there is no humanitarian aid effort and no major negotiating plan to get the parties involved to stop the fighting. Aid groups note that not since World War II have so many people been displaced, with an estimated 68.5 million people fleeing war and persecution worldwide.
The United Nations Refugee Agency reports 96 refugees and migrants freed from the Zintan Detention Center in Libya's capital Tripoli are being kept in a safe place until they can be transported out of the country. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The group of refugees and migrants released on Monday is originally from Somalia, Eritrea, and Ethiopia. They include 2 newborn babies. The UN Refugee Agency reports they are being well cared for in a facility that will shelter them until they are able to leave the country. UNHCR spokesman Baba Balar says his agency is providing them with food, shelter, medical care, and psychosocial support to help them deal with the trauma of their recent detention.
Conditions in Zintan are dire. Living areas were severely overcrowded and lacked proper ventilation. In some parts of the center, toilets are overflowing and are in urgent need of repair. As a result, solid waste and garbage has piled up inside the cell for days and presents a serious health threat.
Security in Tripoli is deteriorating as fighting between the Libyan government and a rebel commander continues without end. The UNHCR reports some 3,000 asylum seekers and migrants remain trapped in government detention centers. Many were brought there after their boats were rescued or intercepted off the coast. Balar says UNHCR would like to get all the refugees and migrants released, but convincing the authorities to do so is not possible. Instead, he says, the agency tries to help the most vulnerable. Balar says asylum seekers cannot go back to their countries of origin, so places have to be found for them in other countries willing to take them.
We can take refugees and asylum seekers to Niger, but then we need a speedier process in terms of finding lasting solutions for them out of Niger, and as well we are calling on many countries in Europe and beyond to help us find legal pathways for these desperate people who are caught up in these dire conditions inside Libya.
The spokesman says the UNHCR is seeking countries to accept the newly freed migrants, but that no date for their departure has been set. He says that in the past, freed migrants have been flown mainly to Niger or to Italy and Romania. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The ruling military council in Sudan has ordered soldiers to surround government buildings and guard roads. The head of the transitional military council, Lieutenant General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, has halted further negotiations with opposition representatives. He also has called for a government to be formed and elections to be held within 9 months. The council said it regrets the events of Monday, in which at least 60 people were killed and hundreds wounded, according to doctors allied with the protesters. However, the council blamed the opposition for the failure to reach agreement on a transitional government after the ouster of long-term President Omar al-Bashir. The military and opposition groups recently broke off negotiations aimed at establishing a temporary government to lead the country until elections can take place. Now, security forces, known as the Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, are deployed in the streets in an effort to impose order. To find out more about the security situation in the capital, Mario Ritter spoke with reporter Jason Patinkin in Khartoum.
Well, in terms of security, I mean, the streets are controlled by the RSF. The Rapid Support Forces, which is the militia that essentially controls Khartoum now and is accused of atrocities in Darfur and other places. And they're, of course, accused of carrying out the massacre on Monday. So moving around Khartoum is not easy. In some neighborhoods, there are lots of roadblocks set up, bricks, stones, trees, you know, metal signposts, garbage, burning tires, to try to block the RSF from entering with their vehicles. And then other areas, there's just a lot of presence of the RSF moving about. It's very hard to confirm what's happening, but there are lots of reports and lots of rumors of RSF shooting people in the various neighborhoods, of continued violence, even entering people's houses. But it's very, very difficult to confirm these allegations. But the city is right now living in fear.
What has the Military Transitional Council, what have they said?
To the citizens, I don't know if there's any instructions they're giving to the citizens. They basically claimed that the operation was a success, but they also said that there were some problems and that they will investigate these. It's unclear where this is going. Right now, people are angry. People are mourning their dead. They're caring for their wounded. And people want the revolution to continue, but it's very difficult to see how it can continue with the massive show of force and use of force in Khartoum right now.
Opposition leaders are on the record calling for massive civil disobedience. Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the roadblocks are civil disobedience, right? They're blocking the streets. They're trying to restrict the movement of the military forces. I don't think people are staying at the barricades the way they used to because they fear being shot or beaten, that sort of thing. The other thing is that it's now the Eid al-Fitr holiday, which lasts basically the rest of the week. So nobody's working anyways. All offices are closed anyways. People are at home. They're not celebrating really this year. It's a very difficult Eid. But the real test of the call for civil disobedience, I think, will be after the holiday ends. Whether or not people go back to work, whether or not people stay home instead and voice their displeasure that way. This action by the government carried out by the Rapid Support Forces has angered the population and really hardened people's views against the military government. That said, I haven't heard any calls for armed struggle. I haven't heard any calls for violent uprising. that seems to be off the table.
That was my colleague Mario Ritter speaking with reporter Jason Patinkin in Khartoum. Patinkin said he also went to Royal Care Hospital. Witnesses said security forces attacked the healthcare center yesterday while injured protesters were being treated. They said the Rapid Support Forces, a militia from Darfur, led by the Transitional Military Council's deputy chief, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, assaulted both demonstrators and doctors. They said the RSF returned to the hospital later as reporters were talking with patients who hid in fear. Doctors say many people injured in the crackdown are recuperating at home.
The Democratic Republic of the Congo's health ministry says the number of Ebola cases in the eastern part of the country has surpassed 2,000. The 1,346 deaths make it the second deadliest Ebola outbreak in history, and a recent surge in new cases raises concerns about the ability to bring the outbreak under control and keep it from spreading to other countries. The Ministry of Health says the fight against the deadly virus is being helped by improved security. Attacks from local militias and distrust of health workers have complicated the response to the disease in an active conflict zone. Tarek Yaresevich spoke with the World Health Organization, talks about the string of attacks on Ebola treatment centers that have killed 5 aid workers, causing setbacks in the containment efforts.
Every time there is a security incident, we are not able to provide services and go into community. We are not able to vaccinate. We are not able to treat those who are ill. We are not able to follow up on those who may have been exposed to the virus.
The U.S. government's Centers for Disease Control and Prevention provides support for the international intervention and now is in the process of stepping up its involvement. Tim Ziemer, acting assistant administrator for the U.S. Agency for International Development, told Congress about a 6-point plan for what he called a broader, more holistic humanitarian approach.
First, we're working to improve coordination among the DRC government, WHO, and our international partners. I'm pleased to say that over the last week to 10 days, significant change is underway to accomplish that objective. Secondly, we are emphasizing and addressing the paramount importance of community engagement and local ownership. Third, we are working with the newly appointed UN Ebola Response Coordinator, Mr. David Gressley, to bolster security coordination through non-militarized humanitarian approaches. And fourth, we're working with CDC to implement operational improvements in the public health response, including a forward-leaning vaccine strategy. Fifth, we're looking at the Ebola readiness in Goma and along the Goma-Bentembo corridor, as well as the 4 countries to the east. And lastly, we're engaged in a longer-term planning scenario for stabilization and development to address the root causes of fragility in the region.
In addition, U.S. Representative Karen Bass, a Democrat from California, has proposed legislation to support USAID's efforts.
This administration has an opportunity and an obligation to try and stop the deadly outbreak, and that's why we're having this hearing, and I'm introducing the Ebola Eradication Act of 2019, which would authorize USAID to assist with the Ebola efforts in the DRC. Lastly, I believe that it is imperative that we not let Ebola reach Goma, because if it does, it's highly probable that it will reach Rwanda, Uganda, Ethiopia, and South Sudan. Oh my goodness. And that would have an effect on humanitarian efforts, peace and security, and economic trade.
The current outbreak was first reported last August. The fight against Ebola has been bolstered by a vaccine that has proved highly effective and new treatments that have helped some patients recover. Still, the disease has killed two-thirds of those who have contracted it.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580, and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Paul Alexander in Washington. The Islamic State group has claimed responsibility for an attack in a second Southern African country as it tries to expand its influence and operations on the continent. Islamic State issued a statement yesterday claiming involvement in an apparent gunfight with the Mozambique military in Cabo Delgado province. The northern province, which is the focus of major national natural gas projects, has been the scene of attacks by armed Islamist groups that have killed 150 to 200 people since October 2017. Islamic State claimed its fighters repulsed an army attack in the locality of Matoubi using a variety of weapons to kill and wound an unspecified number of troops, then seizing weapons, ammunition, and rockets that were left behind. Its claim has not been verified. The Mozambican government and military declined to confirm any rebel activity. Islamic State has claimed two attacks in the northeastern Democratic Republic of Congo since April.
And Mozambique's top court has ruled that a government-guaranteed loan of $850 million in 2013 is not legal. The Constitutional Council declared the contract for the loan null yesterday, meaning that the government denies responsibility for the debt. Mozambique has been struggling to deal with a financial crisis since it was revealed in 2016 that the country had hidden at least $1.4 billion in loans. The discovery caused the International Monetary Fund and foreign lenders to cut financial support for the country, leading to years of crisis. Government officials have not immediately commented on the ruling, which was revealed in documents. It is unclear how the decision will affect efforts by Mozambique to restructure its debts. The $850 million loan was supposed to finance a tuna fishing fleet, but the money went to the Defense Department instead. Mozambique had reached a deal to exchange the debt in 2016, but by then the IMF had cut off lending to the East African nation. The United States estimates that at least $200 million of Mozambique's secret loans were used for bribes and other financial wrongdoing. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Mario Ritter in Washington.
And I'm Paul Alexander. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an examination of the presidential elections in Malawi and South Africa. Peter Mutharika and Cyril Ramaphosa both won, But do their victories reflect the will of the people? The power of incumbency on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.